Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today and on Zoom. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? If so, we would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. All right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. This is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. Please welcome our panelists this evening, Drew and Bryce. I'm going to read the first paragraph at the front of the book on page XXVI, and then the panel will share a few minutes on each reading after that. All right, so page XXVI, we're talking about step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives become unmanageable. The physician who, at our first request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered from alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we are maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or we were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well as our mind, as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Bryce?
Hey, everyone. I'm Bryce, alcoholic.
Hey, Bryce.
Everybody here, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I feel like it sounds corny, but for me, like every day's Christmas as a recovering alcoholic. Again, it sounds really corny, but that's how I feel and think today. My sobriety date's February 12th, 2012. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I have a home group, two home groups, actually. One is right here, Simple Actions every Monday. And the other one is called Sweet Sobriety Meets Sundays at 6 p.m. down at the Oceanfront, Virginia Beach Recovery Club. So that keeps me real involved, you know, and my story is like a lot of people. I was in and out of AA for 7 years. You know, I got sober up the road in Richmond, Virginia. The first couple of years, you know, things would get crazy, and I, you know, would feel like I had a problem. And people had been telling me for years I was an alcoholic, and I would, you know, like most of us, deny that or minimize it or find new friends, you know, and all those things. And then towards the end, I knew I was an alcoholic, but I still didn't stay in the rooms. I thought I could outsmart everybody and manage it, you know, and just, you know, I never got the DUI. I never lost a job due to alcohol. And so eventually God gave me that DUI, and that was a funny story. I deliberately picked an apartment in Richmond in the Church Hill neighborhood, which you can walk to at that time, three different bars I could walk to. And so that's why I rented the apartment. I'm like, this will be perfect. I'll never have to drink and drive, you know? And so the irony of that is I got pulled over driving home from a bar two blocks from my apartment, you know, on, you know, that was in January of 2011. Yeah. So I still didn't get sober right away, you know? But that was, I really should thank that officer, sent her a thank you card, because that was my start. That's really what I needed. I needed the jail at that time. It wasn't the New Richmond jail. It looks like a resort. It was old school. It was freezing cold in the cell. There were about 80 other people in there. Some really scary dudes. You know, I'm not the biggest guy in the world, and I wasn't scared. I was very drunk still, but I didn't want to be there. You know, there were people kicking heroin, and you know, there were prostitutes in there. There was another dude in a tuxedo, you know, who got obviously kind of similar to me. And anyway, I thank God for that night, because I 6 days before then, I saw a guy who used to be my sponsor. And I'm a musician, I play piano, and I was teaching this guy piano, who is my sponsor, and still is my sponsor today, thank God. And anyway, so he could tell I'd go to his house periodically and teach him, and we'd have big conversations after the piano lesson, you know, for an hour usually after every lesson, we'd just talk. And so we had one of those conversations, and he could tell, you know, he said, "So are you able to stay sober?" And I said, no, I'm not able to stay sober, but don't worry about me. I'm going to be real careful. I never drink and drive. I know I'm an alcoholic. I've accepted that, but I'm going to manage it. I'm going to be careful about it and manage it. And then he gave me that speech, which if you've been in these rooms, you've heard it said or repeated. If you keep drinking, you're going to end up dead, in jail, or in another institution. And, you know, and I said, no, I won't. I said, no, I won't. I'm going to be careful. I'm going to be real careful. And so 6 nights later, I got that DUI, you know, and I in that jail cell. And I was thinking throughout the whole night about that conversation with my friend Jeff, who's my sponsor, you know. Jeff was right. Here I am 6 nights later. Boy, that was quick, you know. And so my point is I needed that cell to really dig into AA. And thank God I did, because my life today is unmanaged. It's just unimaginable from what was living like as a drunk, you know, like everything's been restored through working those 12 steps. They've changed me. You know, I'm not, you know, I was much more materialistic and more about, you know, getting ahead and looking good. And really now I couldn't care less about a lot of that stuff. You know, I've got like a peace and a serenity and a contentment. And I want to, you know, and I've gotten that by working my steps, which have kind of reformulated how I live my life, which is really like a life of service. I think that's, we're all meant to help each other along the way. And then when we do that, things flow into us that for me, I don't deserve, you know, like good things flow into me when I'm looking outward and helping others. I remember my sponsor, you know, I called him crying out of the jail cell, you know, that when I got released, and I said, you were right. I left a message on his voicemail. I said, Jeff, you were right. I'm walking home from the Richmond City Jail. You know, they arrested me last night. I blew a 2-3. I'd been drinking for 13 hours on that Sunday. And I said, would you please be my sponsor again? You know, and he called me back and he agreed. And he said, say that third step prayer. And every day, every morning when you get up, do you have it memorized? I said, no, I don't have it memorized. And he's like, well, memorize it and say it every morning that you get up. And so when I looked at it, I said, man, this is talking about helping other people. Like, I need help. I'm $10,000 in debt. I'm probably going to lose my job over this. You know, I feel like I'm in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, man. And this is talking about helping other people. I'm in no position to help anybody. Where's my help? That's really what I thought, you know, at the time. That's how just, you know, crazy I was. And he was a great sponsor. He was just like, shut up and just do it. Just do it every day. And then you'll come to live it. That's what he said. He said, say that every morning and then you'll come to live it. And then when you start acting it out, the good things will flow back in. And so that that's what happened to me. And so it's been an awesome journey. I've taken up a lot of time with that question. I'm going to turn it over to Drew.
Thanks, Bryce.
Let me share.
Hi, my name is Drew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Drew.
I also have a sponsor. He knows he sponsors me. I'm in the process of taking the 12 steps. I have a home group. And I'm an alcoholic. And I really liked that little paragraph. And I could relate a lot to that. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in the fall of 2019. I was 17, almost 18. And I had this big spiritual experience prior to this, kind of like a come to Jesus moment. And I walked in. I remember I went to a meeting in Virginia Beach. I saw the 12 steps and I was like, yeah, I've done it all. You know, already I was thinking, you know, I've done it all. I hadn't even scratched the surface of that. And I stayed sober for 18 months. They were the best time of my life. I was able to get certain qualifications. I got Eagle Scout in that time. I was in the fellowship. I was doing it and it felt so good. I was alive. And that thought wasn't smashed that I could drink like other people. You know, I was like, I'm 18, 19. You know, I've got my whole liver to ruin. And yeah, and I drank. And I drank for 2.5 years. And I was in and out of recovery houses trying to get sober. And I didn't believe I was powerless. I really thought, you know, I can manage this. I actually scoffed at AA. I remember living in an Oxford house, scoffing, like, I'm not going to these meetings. Fuck these people. You know, having this huge spiritual experience, knowing that it worked 18 months. I mean, it really worked in my life. And it all kind of came to a head. My sobriety date's October 2nd, 2023. And I was a driver at a company called Crossfire Logistics at the airport. I was a truck driver. And a year prior to October 2nd, 2023, I checked myself into the psych center for detox. It was the first time I ever tried to stop drinking alcohol. And I was experiencing these same symptoms. I was going to work and I was drenched in sweat and it was just embarrassing. I was shaking. I couldn't even talk. You know, it was just really hard. And yet they still let me drive with it. I don't know why. But I was going through some of those same symptoms and I got really scared. I was like, oh shit, you know? And the first thought was, it's not the alcohol. So I'm going to keep drinking, you know? So I keep drinking and I experienced this awful, I've never experienced more like gastrointestinal pain than I have in that few days before I got sober, October 2nd. Awful pains. I woke one day, I called in a week of work, and it was all directly due to alcohol. I knew, they kind of knew it. My supervisor had said, yeah, it's alcohol. And I woke up one night with these shooting pains and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go to the hospital because I can't do this. If I lose my job, I lose my job. You know, a job's a job. I go into the hospital in the early morning of October 2nd, and I was scared, I was shaking, I was sweating, I was going through detox. And I remember checking in, and I couldn't even speak. You know, they take my blood pressure, and I was like, how was it? Yeah, how's the blood pressure? He's like, it's awful, it's really high. And so he takes it again, and I was like, what about now? No, it's the same thing. And they bring me back. And I live direct, like within walking distance from a hospital. So it was really a God moment. And I'm sitting in this cold hospital bed alone. My phone's turned off. I didn't have the money to turn it back on. And I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, they said this was going to happen and this is happening. And it's not the glory that I thought it was of, you know, DUIs, fun, drinking out of a bag, jail, you know, because I glorify these experiences. And I'm sitting there alone, and I remember the nurse, they pull the curtain, and I was completely honest with that nurse and told them everything. Like, I drink every day, I'm sweating, I have this pain. And the nurse closes the curtain and says, it's a 22-year-old alcoholic. And that was the first time I heard that, like, and it became real. I was like, oh, shit, man. The doctor goes in and, you know, he sees me and he says, Mr. James, you know, you've got gastritis, acute alcoholic gastritis. I was like, well, shit, you know, that doesn't sound good at all, especially the whole alcoholic part. I mean, that was the first time I had that. And it gets better. And so he tells me that, and he's like, Mr. James, we're gonna have to take a stool sample. I'm like, all right, I got you, you know, because I told him, I was like, I'm shitting, you know, but it's blood, like it's bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to. So he says, we're gonna have to take a stool sample. I said, all right, I got you, doc, I can do that. He said, which side do you want to lean on? I said, excuse me, what do you mean? And then I realized, and that was my moment of like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Like, this could all be erased. You know, I can have a new life that I've experienced, that the steps work. I know they work. The fellowship works. And I prayed. I walked home because I was in there 5 hours, and they discharged me. And he said, did you want to go to detox? I said, no, because that was a stupid decision. I would have gone. But I had this job, and I was like, oh, you know, if I lose a job, I lose the apartment, all this stuff. So I prayed, and I was like, God, I'm gonna get sober, but I need your help. I can't do this. For the first time in my life, I have no power whatsoever. I'm shit out of luck. And it's like this hide and seek with God, and I always get found. And but with this paragraph with the allergy, I really like that, because I was raised in a household where it was, you know, prayed away, you know, mental illness, you know, we don't talk about it. Very religious and spiritual. And I appreciate the upbringing I had, but as an adult and reading the doctor's opinion, you know, when I first came in here, I was like, yeah, what does he know? What does that doctor know? And now I realize it is true. Like, it is an allergy. Once I start, I can't stop. But yeah, I'm so grateful for this program and my experience. Because if I didn't have that experience, I would probably be dead. You know, I really would have. So yeah, I'll just pass with that.
Thank you, Drew. All right, for the next reading, we're going to hop over to Roman numeral page 28. That's XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Bryce?
Yeah, it's, you know, I'll talk about I'll really talk about the first time I realized that I was an alcoholic. I was working as a pianist on a Royal Caribbean cruise ship, and you know, all the musicians were either drunks or they're in recovery, actually, you know, and which I found interesting. You know, most of them were drunks, active drunks, but there were a few, including my direct boss, was in recovery, and he tried to help me so much. But anyway, I remember sleep, being in bed, and then starting to shake, you know, and sweat. Like what Drew was saying, and that was the first time that ever happened to me. It was back in 2003. I was always a heavy drinker, and I guess that you know, I decided I was always able to stop, right? You know, like I would do something stupid, and be like, okay, it's time for me to stop drinking for a week or 2 weeks or a month or whatever. And so while working on those cruise ships, I was always able to stop, but this time, when I stopped, I had the shakes and the sweats. And so I remember thinking, well, I can't, you know, I'm here for another, whatever it was, month or two. I'm like, I can't solve this now. I'll just work through it. And then when I get off the ship in a month or two, I'm gonna have to like address this, you know, and figure out what it is. And so I remember getting off the ship, and then I ran to a Barnes and Noble bookstore, and I went to the self-help section, and I'm a big self-help books guy, and I can do this on my own. And I bought a book called The Recovery Book, which is by Dr. Mooney. which I still have. I love that book. And it has like, you know, maybe 30 or 40 chapters on mostly alcoholism and a little bit of addiction. And then just one of the chapters is AA. And it's basically like AA works great for most people, but you can get sober without doing it. And I was like, good, because I don't want to do AA. You know, there's a hope for me, you know. But anyway, it really helped me. It was instrumental in kind of getting me to get started on the path, you know. And so then I would just cold turkey stop. And so I think I went to that bookstore, and then like I was staying with a brother. He was away, thank God. His family, he's got two, I have two nephews. And so him, his wife, his two nephews were away at the Jersey Shore. This was up in the town I grew up in northeastern Jersey. And I'm like, perfect. This will be a great way for me to sober up. I'll have Paul's house for a week and no one to bother me. And I can just rest and take it easy. Well, I, you know, like 2 or 3 days into that, my body went crazy. I had the DTs, legitimate DTs, seeing things that weren't there. You know, I remember trying to drink a glass of orange juice and I couldn't do it. I was shaking like so bad. I couldn't drink a glass of orange juice without spilling it, you know, even with two hands. I mean, that's talk about a physical allergy, you know. And then I felt like I was having a heart attack. Like on the third day, my heart was racing so much. And so I called 911, you know, at my brother's house. And then God again was like in charge. The cop that showed up was the younger brother of one of my best friends. And like Drew was saying, that first time we used that A word, you know, he showed up. And that was the first time I admitted to someone, you know, like I was glad it was him. And I said, and I just spilled everything, you know. I said, Mike, and I knew him very well. I grew up in a small town, and so I knew him well. I said, Mike, this is, you know, I've been trying to quit drinking. I've been drinking like 32 ounces of vodka every day for 6 months, and I stopped, and I'm an alcoholic, and my body's like going nuts, you know. And then one thing he said to me right away, which I've heard dozens of times since then in here, is like, never do that. Never stop drinking on your own. You know, never do that again. Because go to the hospital when hopefully this will never happen to you again, but if it does, go to the hospital. Never do this like without help, because he's like, it's worse than kicking heroin. That's what he said to me, you know, and that's what it felt like. I mean, I felt like a junkie, like in every sense of the word. And so, yeah, that was like that physical allergy. And I remember being on that ship and just, you know, I remember talking to a guy that worked in the casino, you know, like at the staff bar. And, you know, I was drinking like pretty much straight vodka, you know, almost. And so I was like, can I make you a drink? You know, and he was like, sure, you know, and I made him a drink like I would drink it, you know, and he was just like, Jesus Christ, you know, I can't drink this, you know. And then he just like put it down and then he started, and then he turned to me and he said, why do you drink so much? You know, he just looked me dead in the eye, you know, like, why do you drink so much? And I just was like, I didn't have an answer, you know, and that's this allergy. Like I'm convinced, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My father was the alcoholic. I vowed I would never drink at all. Growing up, you know, and that didn't last long. I think I made it like 4 or 6 weeks while my friends were going out, starting to drink at age 15 or 16. And I would stay at home and I was real vigilant and, you know, definitely, you know, strong in my swearing off. And then I would hear the stories, like the fun stories they would say about. And so I had that fear of missing out and the peer pressure, you know, like I'm not one of the group, fear of missing out. And then that first night I did drink Budweiser cans, you know, on the railroad tracks, Glen Rock, New Jersey. And I never forget how it made me feel. I hated the taste, but I loved the way it made me feel. Loved it. And I'm like, this life is going to be okay. I have my new best friend, you know. So anyway, that's enough out of me on that paragraph, Drew.
Thank you. I like the paragraph. I could relate a lot. The line that kind of stuck out to me was these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Once having formed the habit, they found they cannot break it. Their problems pile up and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I can relate a lot to that. Their problems pile up and it is so hard. When I was drinking for those 2.5 years and getting out of AA, you know, I really first thought, okay, I was a drug addict. You know, I like drugs. And then with that aside, and I discovered alcohol, rediscovered alcohol, and I got drunk. It was like, this is it. This is the elixir of life that will, all my life, I felt like I needed a rite of passage, that my life was a movie and I needed these certain experiences to survive. I really felt that way. I was adopted from Ukraine at 18 months old. And my parents, you know, didn't grow up in an alcoholic household. My mom and dad will share one beer, maybe once a year. And my mom will get all red faced. She calls it rosacea. It's really cute, real sweet. And they don't even finish the whole thing. And, you know, I just wondered, I pondered that. I was like, that's kind of odd. Why don't you finish it? You know? And my mom's like, are you safe to drive? I was like, you had one sip. So it was, I felt like it was weird. I had this constant, like, I felt like a stranger living with all these people. And I discovered drugs and alcohol, really alcohol, at an early age. And it made sense. It connected a piece that was missing. And from what I know from my birth, you know, I do believe my birth mother was alcoholic. I believe it's genetic. I believe there is, that plays a huge role in it. And yeah, it connected a piece and I felt a part of, felt like I can do this thing, social anxiety. I can talk to people. But most of all, I wanted to clock out because of some experiences, you know, trauma. I really felt like this is a way to, you know, clock out and just release from boredom and care. And when I drank these last 2.5 years, I'll share a story. My car, I was never good at fixing my car. You know, the car would break down. I was, it was an alternator one time. And then the window, I never got that fixed. They would just pile up and they would try to tow. I live in an apartment complex. And if your car's not up to code, they're going to tow it. And, so they tried to do that a few times and, you know, I'd cough up the 145 and I get really mad. I'm like, screw Jack's towing. You know, I'm not, why are they even touching my car? And I wouldn't fix those little issues. It would take a moment like last year checking myself into to detox for my parents to really, well, I should have fixed it, but my parents, thank God, they helped fix it to do that. You know, it took that moment of like, okay, I'm gonna get sober, you know, to prove to you guys that I need help, a little cry for help. And I am such a procrastinator. I put off things even now. I mean, it takes a lot for me to kind of sit down and finish something to completion. So for me, even, you know, sometimes it is the astonishingly difficult to solve. But with AA, being sober, I mean, that kind of, it helps. It gives me a compass, per se. And I could relate a lot to the detox, DTs. I was, last 2 years ago, I was driving and I was hearing things and seeing things and I was tripping out. I thought I had alcoholic wet brain and I looked it up and I went to detox at the psych center and I asked the doctor, I said, do I have wet brain? And he's like, no, if you're saying you have wet brain, you don't have wet brain. So that was good. But I realized, I mean, it's funny, like as much as I scoffed at AA, and it's even in Bill's story with Ebby, you know, scoffing at Ebby Thatcher. It was true. Like these experiences only prove that I was an alcoholic, that I can't drink safely. And when I do, it's bad. It's bad in all forms. I'll share one quick thing about the allergy. When I was drinking, I would get this thing. It's actually called alcohol intolerance. I looked it up, which is funny because I'm pretty tolerant for alcohol. But I would be drinking and my roommate would notice. He's like, your whole body, your face is red. Your whole, you know, just redness of skin. And I remember one time I woke up, I was drunk on the weekend and somebody was at my door and they're like, "Hey, Mr. Krabs." And I was like, "What?" You know, and I look in the mirror and I was like blushing super badly. And I got really scared. And so even the medical part of alcoholism was starting to etch into my life, where I realized this is really real. Alcohol is doing something physically to my body that I can't explain. I felt so embarrassed. I didn't know what to tell him. Like, I'm drunk, you know? I mean, what do you say to that? But yeah, I mean, it just proves, it's constant proof, without a reasonable doubt, that I'm where I'm supposed to be. I'm a pickle. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to stay on Roman numeral page 28, XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Bryce?
Yeah, I love the end of that. You know, I love those last few sentences. And that's kind of how I live my life today. You know, and you know, that phrase of we all intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. I mean, that's my promise today, you know. So, you know, there are no big deals for me today. It's like, as long as I stay sober. And that's why, you know, I keep the home groups. I stay grounded. You know, when I was drinking, it was I was a bar drinker. So it was like a full-time job. You know, I was in the bar, you know, at least 40 hours a week, you know? And so, so today my view is like, okay, well, I can spend 3 or 5 hours a week just on my recovery. And then that enables me to do life outside, you know? And when I'm living life outside, I want to be of maximum use to my fellows in every role of my life. So at my workplace, as a son, as a friend, you know, one of the things I love, my mom lives up in Richmond now, and she has Alzheimer's, and she's in an assisted living facility. But really, before she got in there, I got to spend really the last like 8 or 9 years as her like caretaker. I would manage her care with her doctors. And so just making sure she was getting the best possible care, the memory medications, the financial aspect of all that, you know, managing all that. And I'm so grateful that I could do that, because when I was a kid, when I was like a teenager, I would take her car and stay out all night drinking, like with my friends, you know, and that was before cell phones. So just like, as now that I'm older, I think like, what would it be like to be a parent and your 17-year-old takes your car out and says they're going to be back at 1 in the morning or 12, and they don't come back all night, and it's before cell phones. Like, what would that feel like as the parent, you know? And when I was the kid, selfishness and self-centeredness, you know, who cares? We're having fun. I'm young, you know, but now, like, I hate that I did that to my mom. But I've gotten a chance, kind of like a living amends to pay it back, you know, and helping her and caring for her the best way that I can. So that's really my sober life today is, but I do my AA to remind myself, yeah, you're still a drunk and you can't drink safely. And then now go out and live a, you know, be a, like in every role, be a 10 out of 10. That's really what I try for in every role, be it like, be my best employee, as an employee, as a son, as a friend, you know, which involves doing stuff that we don't want to do. You know, David sends out these beautiful messages every morning. And there was one the other day that I loved. It says kind of like, it only really counts when you don't want to do it and you do it. And that thing hit me like a ton of bricks because I'm like, wow. And then something came up that day, you know, actually, yeah. So I'm a church musician, so I've been really busy the last few days. Something came up that day with music at the church, you know, and I just, you know, kind of like wanted to wring someone's neck. But that message was in my head, like, no, we got to be of, we got to be of maximum use to our fellows and of service and of help and, you know, generosity. And so that's what I try to do, you know, even when I don't want to do it. And that's so that's it. I'll pass to Drew.
Cool. Yeah, I love this. I love this paragraph. I love all doctors' opinion. I like the last line, and Bryce kind of alluded to it. What was it? The only effort necessary being that that required to follow a few simple rules. And this time around, coming into AA, after having that hospital experience and realizing I'm screwed. Like, there's no other ifs, ands, or buts. I'm screwed. And I know what works. I went to a meeting and I had, there were people I saw that I remembered. I was like, holy moly. And they remembered me. And I'm like, this guy's still sober? Oh my gosh. Like, and one guy, he talked to me right as I was going in to this meeting. It was in downtown Norfolk, called Downtown Young and Sober. And he said, what's different? You know, what's different this go around? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. I've truly conceded I'm an alcoholic. And I sat in that meeting kind of, you know, I think it was my second meeting coming back in. And I was all nervous. I didn't want to share. And Bryce comes walking in. And he came up to me after we noticed each other. And it was so good to see someone I had known when I first got sober at 17, 18, and having a position at Sweet Sobriety and building rapport with him. And that night I texted him. I said, will you be my sponsor? And I loved what he responded. He said, are you willing to go to any lengths to stay sober? And I thought, yes. Like, that is at that, I really felt I was so desperate. I was like, I need something. And clearly, you know, being a good boy doesn't really work. You know, I've tried that. I really tried with the good thinking. And it was that simple, you know, are you willing to go to any lengths? And today I have a few simple steps that I take in the morning. You know, he told me, say the third step prayer. And I remember I was on the phone and I was like, the third step prayer, God, I offer myself. And I remembered it. I was like, holy moly. Like, this, some of this stuff was truly, I hope I never forget it. And I remember that prayer and I got on my knees and I started praying that. And something has changed in these, what is it, like 84 days. Something has changed, whether it's the grace of God expelling the obsession, but I no longer think about it. I no longer have these, but I have to take these steps. And I go to meetings. I do things that make me uncomfortable. Like, I'm very thankful for Amy inviting me. And at the time I was kind of like, oh, I don't really want to do that. But thank God I did, you know, because it's those simple actions and people who are still sober today that I've known for 4 or 5 years, where it's like, this program really works. And there's a reason we come back, or I come back to the meetings, because I have a quick forgetter, real quick, you know, and I need to be reminded alcoholism is fatal and it's progressive. And if it's left untreated, it will result in other behaviors that will lead to a drink. And I don't want to die. And I love that. Yeah, a few simple rules. Just, it really is simple, and yet I overcomplicate it. Like, you know, it's honesty. It's like the four, what was it? The four Oxford truth, honesty, absolutes. Yeah. And I'm glad I have a program today, and it works. It's not magic, but it works. It is so crazy how it works. And I mean, I'm thankful. So. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you both. We're going to go over to Roman numeral page 30, XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Bryce?
Yeah, like I said earlier, you know, I was in and out of here for 7 years, you know, trying to manage this thing in every possible way I could. And it talks about it in the book, you know, we switched drinks. I was really mostly like a beer drinker, you know, and I would drink a little bit of wine. And then I started getting into vodka. Actually, before vodka, I got into gin. I used to love drinking Tanqueray and tonics. And so, but then the gin, as you know, it can make people very angry. And so that started happening to me. Like I would turn into like a Jekyll and Hyde, and, you know, people be like, what happened to you last night? And I'm like, I don't really know. I remember saying all those things that I don't know where they came from. And so then I switched from gin to vodka, you know, and then I would drink shots all the time, you know, Jägermeister or whatever was in front of me. And so then I said, okay, it's the shots. So as long as I just stick to vodka or gin, I'll be okay. It's those shots, you know? And then, you know, it just, yeah, it took me 7 or 8 years, and then I needed that jail cell, you know, which thank God I got that. You know, I mean, I had so many scares. God was throwing things into my life, you know, really probably the last 15 years of my drinking. I was getting hard stops and blowing right through them, you know? You know, I remember my mom came to visit me on one of those cruise ships, and she saw like my tolerance was like insane. And so she wrote me a long letter about, you know, we've got alcoholism in our family. Your father was an alcoholic. Her father, my grandfather, was an alcoholic. Actually, on the bottle of old granddad bourbon, the gentleman's likeness is one of my relatives. So it's in my family. They're from, yeah. My mom's side of the family's from Kentucky. Yeah, Louisville. And so that's one of my relatives. And so it's in me, you know, and I tried every imaginable thing. That story, I said in 2003, I got a little bit of recovery. I went to, you know, at the hospital, I used that alcoholism word, and they referred me to like a counselor. The counselor was like this sweet little girl that was like, you can get sober. You don't need AA to get sober, but it works for some people. And, you know, like, I wish she would have hammered AA more, but she didn't. And yeah, I remember at that time, you know, I remember, I think around in that period somewhere, I stayed sober for 6 months, you know, at that time. But then like shortly thereafter, I remember staying with another brother up there in Northern Jersey and going to a meeting, and it wasn't there. And so I went out and drank, you know, like the meeting wasn't there. And it was a Baptist church in a neighboring town from where my brother lived. And I, you know, felt like an idiot walking in. I'd never been there. And, you know, the church was open, and I'm looking around. I didn't know what to look for. You know, now I know what to look for. But back then I didn't, you know. Now you just look for the people standing outside smoking cigarettes. But back then I didn't even know that, you know. And I'm traipsing around this Baptist church. And then I see someone in their office who I think was like the pastor of the church. And I said, excuse me, sir, is there an AA meeting here? And then the guy looked up and he's like, no, we don't let those, you know, or just no, we don't do that anymore. You know, and so that night I remember going across the street, there was a bar, and starting to drink again. You know, just it's just craziness, you know. Just in and out for 7, 8 years, you know. Even worse than that, I ended up around that same period, I signed up for a charity bike ride up in Northern Jersey to benefit MS. And so it was 50 miles a day that you bike. And so I was kind of training for that. And was undertrained, it turns out. The ride was a lot more hilly. They have more hills in Western New Jersey than I thought. So I had this little hybrid bike, hybrid trek, and these other people are on like road bikes, you know, going up and down. Anyway, I ended up having a heart attack on that ride. And so, but it was more, I'm convinced, from drinking alcoholically for 25 years than it was from being undertrained, you know? And anyway, you know, I remember using that, I didn't drink for a few months, but then after I got the all clear, you know, I did like a rehab and the doctor's like, everything's good. We fixed you. Everything's good. We put a stent in. You're good to go. I remember drinking the red wine and like that link about red wine's good for your heart. And then I got another cruise ship gig shortly thereafter. And I remember being on the cruise ship up in Alaska, summer of 2004 was in Alaska. And just saying to myself, I'm only going to drink red wine and I'm never going to have more than two glasses. Yeah. And that lasted probably like 3 days, you know, after like the fourth day, I'm like, this is a silly rule. I can have like four or five. As long as I stick to red wine, if two is good for you, then four or five must be just as good. So I'll be okay as long as I stick to red wine. And then that lasted maybe another week. And then I was back to the old Bryce, you know, like 32 ounces of vodka every day, you know? And so it's just, you know, it's so true for me. You know, I tried for 7-8 years to manage it every which way I could. And I couldn't. You know, and if I had known how good my life was going to get through AA and working the 12 steps, I would have just done it right away. You know, I would have done all this right away. I had so much fear, you know, like in that recovery book by Dr. Mooney, it talks about these fears, like, and that was the most important chapter for me. Like, I didn't know how to do life sober. I mean, everything, I interviewed for jobs, like, over a drink, you know, how do you date somebody without having a few drinks? What about going to a sporting event or a concert? I've never done that sober. How would I go about doing that? Like, I didn't know how to do anything, you know, sober. And so I've had to learn all that. Some of it I'm still learning, you know, even all these years later, and that's okay. Like we don't need to know everything today. Like when I was a drunk, I did need to know everything, you know? And today I'm okay. I remember hearing at an AA meeting years ago, you know, this guy shared, I'm okay today saying the three words that you'll never hear in any bar. I don't know, you know? And so that's how I am today. Like I can admit that I don't know everything. It's, I don't need to be a know-it-all. I have a prescription for living. It's pretty much in here. It's about service and helping others for the most part. Acknowledging that there's a God and it's not me. And everything's right here, you know, and as long as I stay connected, I know I'll be okay. You know, I know I have a safe place here and my life has kept getting better and better and better. Really now my workplace, the last two workplaces and the last places I've lived geographically, they don't know Bryce the drunk. You know, in Richmond, a lot of them do, but if I told them the stories, how I used to drink or what I used to do, they really wouldn't believe me. They would think I'm lying, you know, and which I love that, you know, I think it's great, you know, so I'll pass. Drew.
Thank you. Another great paragraph. I could relate a lot to what Bryce is saying, and in my own head of kind of inactive drinking, of the fantasy of the idea I wanted to project of what I look like. And that wasn't the case. I was sloppy. I was just pissy. I mean, it was really messy. And I remember I bought a bathrobe and I got a decanter and I had whiskey and I thought, you know, I'm going to drink like a gentleman. And I really did. I had this idea of like gentleman drinking, you know, I even got Gentleman Jack. I thought that was cool. And I would try, you know, just little by little, just ease it. And I'd end up fully wasted. And every single time, or I'd go out with somebody and I'd have a few drinks and then it'd be a blackout. And I'd wake up like, what did I do? You know, and it blows my mind that persona I tried to present to other people in active alcoholism. Like alcohol was the center of my life. It was my God. It was my master. I was a slave to it. And, you know, I stole money for it, you know, and it's crazy. I did everything that alcoholics kind of do. And I did. And the phenomenon of craving is crazy. I thought about it. I fantasized about it, romanticized about it, glorified it when I was doing it. And then I would do it all over again. And the only reason I kept a job was strictly for alcohol. That was the only reason. And I think this go around coming into AA, I was at my parents today for Christmas, and I was sharing a little bit about my experience. And it's like, they didn't even know really that other guy who, you know, I joked with my roommate. I was like, I'm going to call my parents drunk, you know, just for shits and giggles. And I had no respect, and I'd call them, and, you know, I asked them, I was like, did you know I was drunk? They're like, yeah, you were slurring your words. And I was like, dang. So they did know, but they didn't know to that deep extent of really how bad it was. I don't even think my roommates really knew how crazy it got. And my sister said something like, you're crazy. You know, you're crazy. All these stories. Cause I was kind of telling her a story, and I was like, but I'm sober now. You know, I'm sober. You know, that's not going to happen again. So, I mean, the phenomenon of craving, it's happened to me in active drinking. And I can't seem to stop it other than a power greater than myself. Or jail, or even that, but like it has to be that psychic change that the doctor's opinion talks about. Like that really has to happen, and once it's happened, it's like, dang, this is actually, it's like it was the scariest thing coming into AA, but yet the most freeing. It's a paradox. It is a beautiful paradox. But I got really scared when I first came in. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I thought, how could I picture my life 5 years down the road at a wedding, at a, you know, just college? How could I picture that totally sober? And thank God I don't have to think about 5 years from now. I don't have to think about tomorrow, today. I was asked by my roommate's girlfriend, you know, she said, Drewby, do you think you're going to quit drinking forever? And I said, for 24 hours, you know, I'm going to, today, I don't want to drink. Tomorrow, I don't know. Like, and she said, I like that mindset. You know, she's actively drinking in my roommate. And it's like, I don't want to think about the future, like all the way down the road. Cause I get scared. I'm like, oh man, that it's too much to handle. I get overwhelmed. And this program is one day at a time, one moment at a time. It doesn't matter how much time you have. It's today. So yeah, that's really pretty much all I have on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, our last reading is going to be on page 152. I'm going to read this, and then you'll each have about 2 minutes to stick the landing. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. Bryce?
Yeah, that's a great two paragraphs. I just, you know, I kind of alluded to it earlier. My life today is just off the charts from what it was when I was a drunk. You know, there's not enough time in the day. You know, when I was a drunk, I would, you know, towards the end, living up there in Richmond, I'd sleep till whenever, usually around 11 in the morning, walk to the bar, have lunch, start drinking at noon, sometimes go into work, buzzed, you know, and it was all about where can I get the next drink. I was just living so low, you know. You know, I was going to the worst bars to make myself look the best. You know, I remember this one bar I was hanging out, and a guy sat next to me, and he recognized me from the church that I played at. And he said, hey, aren't you the guy that plays piano at that church? And I said, yes, I am, you know. And he said, what the hell are you doing in a place like this? And I was like, yeah, what do you mean, man? This is cool. I like it here, you know. And then he said, it was another God thing. I never saw this person again in my life. He said, if you keep hanging out in places like this, you'll become one of these people. And then he stood up and he walked out the door. It's like out of a movie, you know? And so my life is just, you know, now there's not enough hours in the day. I have a full life, you know, in every area of my life. It's the opposite. Everything's switched, you know? I used to be the person no one called. Let's not call Bryce. My family, my friends, don't call Bryce. You know, very a loner, you know, just nothing happening. And today it's the opposite. Who should we call about this dilemma? Let's call Bryce. He's the most upstanding person. Who can we trust with money? Let's call Bryce. It's the opposite, you know, of what it used to be like. And it's all a result of working these steps and everything in this book. So thanks for letting me share.
True. Thank you. Bryce. Yeah. Today my life has purpose. I have a new meaning. It's not about me. And that's the beauty of the paradox again, you know, to live, you got to die. And that it's the beauty. And my favorite line, I'll just read a little. It's one line in the preface that really stuck to me this time. It's at the end of the preface and it's talking about the 42 personal stories. And you think, yes, that happened to me. Or more important, yes, I felt like that. Or yes, I believe this program can work for me too. And that is why I stay. I mean, it's crazy. My life, like Bryce said, it's night and day. I mean, it truly is. And it's a miracle every second, every moment I'm not drinking or thinking about a drink. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you both. At this time, we're going to pass the 7 tradition basket. Donations can be made in cash, PayPal, or Venmo. There'll be links in the Zoom chat as well. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7 tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. A word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. At this time, we'll open up the floor to any AA-related announcements. All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or if you need a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. All right. There is literature available over there on the table. Please see myself or any other home group member after the meeting if you would like some literature. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or you can go to our website for more information at info or email at info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. I don't believe that there is a meeting after the meeting tonight because it's not open, but before you leave, please make sure that you come up and thank our panelists, and we appreciate everybody being here tonight, and let's give them one more round of applause. All right. At this time, we'll go ahead and close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer.
Thank you.
Oh, yep, I messed it up. Hang on a second.
Oh, that's okay.
Ah, it's already too late. Never mind.
How dare you?
I know, right? I'm fired. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming.